The Adriatic Sea is a body of water separating the Italian peninsula from the Balkans. The Adriatic is the northernmost arm of the Mediterranean Sea, extending from the Strait of Otranto to the northwest and the Po Valley. The mitigating effects of the Adriatic Sea can be felt in many regions of Europe, but it is in the northernmost part where it is most visible. Winds coming from the south are channeled through the whole sea into Friuli, Slovenia and Istria. For Paul Balk, author of the book North Adriatic, those regions are now separate only politically, but they are connected by their climate, and they could be considered as a wide over different states wine region. We center our attention on Friuli Venezia Giulia, as it represents well the climatic condition of the North Adriatic and its incredible diversity of grape varieties. We talk about the historical importance of those regions, both locally and internationally. We discussed why the hills and the plains should not be considered as site A or B, where grapes are grown in those regions. And before we get into the discussion, if you're enjoying the podcast, please consider leaving us a review. And in the end, you can get a 10% discount code to use for the book Nord Adriatic. Hi, I'm Mattia Scarpazza, and this is the Looking Into Wine podcast. Wine and winemaking can be complex, but this podcast has a simple mission. We want to give you the skills and tools to harness your passion about wine. Through this series, we will shine a spotlight on some of the different regions, processes, and concepts that shape the fascinating world of wine. I hope you're enjoying the show and your own journey, Looking Into Wine. Hello, welcome to the Looking Into Wine. I'm Mattia Scarpazza, and today's guest is an author of three books, and one of them is on Piedmont wine and is also a pianist. He recently released a book called North Adriatic, Friuli Venezia Giulia, West Slovenia, Istria, Cavaner. Welcome to the show, Paul Balk.
Thank you.
So why did you decide to write a book about the North Adriatic and why now?
Yes, Mattia, I wrote a book about Piedmont, like you told. And in Piedmont, I did a lot of research and I wrote about the whole area. Then I said, I want to write about Northeast Italy. And at first you start to drive in Friuli and you start to visit regions like Collio, Collio Orientale is also. But then after doing more study, after reading books, especially also history books, but history of wine too, you understand this region is bigger. And so I came with the concept of the North Adriatic, because the real region is situated in three countries. You know, wine is a physical matter. The vineyards and the wine culture does not stop at the border. It goes on. And this is very much the situation here, which makes the region also interesting. So in short words, you can call this area one terroir, three countries. And I think this is a very nice slogan to make understand that here we have a region like Bordeaux, like Burgundy, like Piemonte, but in this case it is situated in three countries. And
absolutely. I mean, I'm fascinated about the old Friuli and all this region. My grandfather is from the area, so it's something close to my heart. And when you're talking about the history earlier, it was, there has been a big influence between Austrian and East Slovenia, especially in Friuli, and with different borders throughout the history. How did that affect the wines?
Well, I would say that the history is very important here, and you can only understand the wines if you know about the history. Because here the history started already before the Romans. We think that there were wines near Aquileia and probably also Istria about 300 before Christ. And then you see the course of the history with the later period, the upcoming of the powers of Venice and Habsburg. And the area becomes then one region dominated by one power, which was Austria. You see that the whole region and the parts and the wine regions that are now in Slovenia and Istria, they still have the same grape varieties and the same wine traditions, and it's all related. And that makes this area also very interesting.
I mean, even now, when you speak to some of the producers from the area, they do speak Slovenia, most of them, especially the producer on the western side, and it still is very interesting for me. And how does the climate define? How does what's the climate like in the North Adriatic?
The climate is fantastic here. I make a comparison with Piemonte because very often in winter I drive from Piemonte to Friuli. And you see that in Piemonte, it's cloudy, there's fog, in the night it's very cold, also during the day it's cold. And then you come in Friuli and you have beautiful air, the Bora wind blows the clouds away and you can make fantastic photos. You see the sea and the white mountains. This clear air and this warm climate, and this is very suited for wine production. So Friuli is very much benefiting of the Adriatic on one side and the mountains on the other side, which creates very special climate because the mountains bring down fresh air and the sea creates warm air, especially in winter. So it makes a very moderate climate, not too cold in winter and not too warm in summer.
And when you're talking about the hills, the mountains, obviously Friuli is famous to have the flatter area of the Grave, and then you have the Collio. But in your book you said we shouldn't be defining it as A and B, which I do agree because I tried many wines from both the Collio and the flatter area. Why shouldn't we not define them as A and B?
Well, this is a good question, but I should say for several things on this. First thing is that in the general mind of the people here in Friuli, there is something like the hills of Collio and Collio Orientale is something like Serie A, the most important part. And then you have the flat areas with the Grave and Isonzo, the plains of Friuli. This is something like, okay, they are existing, they make wine, but it's kind of Serie B level. And I do not agree with that. Because, first of all, a scientific argument, the newest insights and the newest stand of science says that for wine, 70% of the wine is made by the climatical conditions and 30% is defined by the soil conditions. So the soil is a little bit less important for the wine than the climate. And you can see it because the same kind of climate you find on the hills and in general, I am speaking in general, of course, because there are small differences, yes. In my book, I also wrote about small differences. But the general climate is very moderate and the same in the hills and the small countries. Then you have the difference in soils between the hills, which is Ponca, very special flesh soil. In the soils, you don't have it. And what you get in the class from many producers in Grave, and Isonzo, and also some other places like I tasted some really great Malvasia from Aquileia area, is that you can have really very interesting, delicate, well-made wines from the areas of Isonzo, Grave, Aquileia. So we cannot say they are not high-standing wines. They are excellent wines, wonderful wines of very high gastronomic value. It shows that we should not value the flat areas. Then there's one more thing. The flat areas of Friuli have still to develop more qualities. I think there's qualities of wines to develop for the future. When you make an analysis of the soils, some parts of Isonzo and Grave are very similar to high-quality soils of Medoc and Grave in Bordeaux. And that area, Pauillac, Saint-Estève, and Grave, Pessac Lannoyant, you have fantastic soils where some of the most expensive wines of France are made. And when they make such wines on such soils, why is that not possible in the Grave and Isonzo in Friuli?
I mean, they're famous for this sort of gravelly soil in there. There is, and then you mentioned also the, can't remember the name of the other soil found in the Collio. I do agree that amazing wine produced both in the flattened area and on the hillside. But also I think in Friuli, it's very interesting because they have so many grape varieties and native and non-native native. And I think a producer can really play with different grape varieties and where they are from, where they're best suited.
The big amount, the big number of different varieties of Friuli is something to think about. You have the discussion of what is authentic, indigenous, and what is not indigenous. That's a very difficult discussion because we don't know exactly where the grapes are coming from. When was the first time that a grape was created in nature? We don't know. So there is no exact definition of the origin of a wine like Ribolla Gialla or Malvasia. We don't know. They did do some research on it, and they said, first they said Malvasia is from Greece. Now we know that the Malvasia, which is planted in the area of Friuli and Istria, is not from Greece because it has no genetic relation at all with any of the grapes over there. And there is no other relation with any grape. And also, it should be something original from here. They don't know exactly where it comes from. And the strange thing is that the Malvasia did not appear as a grape variety in any document before 1890 or something. That is very strange.
And we're talking about Malvasia istriana, which is the one planted in the area. Also, thinking of Friulano, which originally came from Bordeaux. And there is a bit of Bordeaux variety planted in Friuli. Amazing Merlot.
Well, you know, the point is, why are there a lot of French varieties in Friuli? It has to do with a kind of reasoning by the Austrian authorities who were in Friuli in 1850, because this territory was part of the Habsburg Empire. So in 1850, the problem started with the illness of the plants. It is called oidium, which is affecting many plants, and there was a big crisis in that year. It was 1850 exactly. Then the authorities started to think how to resolve the problems, and they saw they should import grape varieties from France and also from Piemonte, because that can be the solution. And they introduced those varieties and checked. And actually, they brought 9 varieties from Piemonte in that period and 7 varieties from France. And among them were Sauvignon Blanc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Chardonnay. And there was also a grape that got lost, and that is now Friulano. And there's one something special about this grape variety, because it's as you said, it's from Bordeaux. It's also planted in the Loire. So I'm not sure if it's more original from Bordeaux or Loire. Anyway, it's from France. But in France, they say it's not an interesting variety. You better take Sauvignon Blanc. That's much more interesting. So you cannot really get wine from it in France. But it's the French variety. And what you see in these conditions in Friuli, it gives great wines with a fantastic complex expression of aromas, density in the mouth, and a very long taste. Some really fantastic wines are made here. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, the espresso, the grape, the espresso where they're from, Friulano, I think, is one of the great representative of Friuli and north of Italy. Is unique. It's mostly found only there. And I mean, for me, on the concept of your book, which is covering multiple states, the most interesting, which I didn't know, was the part of the Collio and the Slovenia Barda, which I don't know if I pronounced it correctly. How does that work, and why is it so special?
Well, you have to understand that in the past, this area was situated near Gorizia. And when you go north from Gorizia, you go into the hills, and you have a wonderful pattern of hills for many kilometers, a very special landscape. The point is, in the time of Austria, this was the most important wine area for Vienna, for the Habsburg Empire, gave the maximum attention to this area. It was very important, and they wanted the best wines from this area. They had to go to Vienna, of course. So the emperor himself paid attention to that and take care that these wines come to Vienna. Later, they call it wines from Gorizia. Then they started to call it wines from the hills. That is called Colli or Collio. Collio is a G. Later, it became Collio like today. And in Slovenian, it became the same name, which is Brda. Burda means means hills in the Slavic language, and in, originally Collio was the name of the whole territory in the Italian language, which includes the part of Slovenia now, and Burda was the name of the whole area only in the Slovenian language, but originally it also was indicating the whole area. And now what you see is that in 1947, after the Second World War, they made a division of the area, and for the first time there was a state border running through this wine territory, which is, in fact, very strange. Imagine that you go to Burgundy or Bordeaux, and they go to the best wine region there, and they make a state border through it. That would be incredible. Well, and here it happened.
Yeah, as I mean, it was the Iron Curtain, I think.
Yes.
You mentioned it. I think it was when you're talking about the region, but there has been a recent development, and now the border have been reopened. Producers can grow vines in the other part. There's been a little movement in there.
Yes, it's very interesting to see how it went, because when the border was made in 1947, some wineries ended up in Yugoslavia, but the people still had some ground and some terrains and some parcels in Italy. And the same happened in Italy. Some of the Italian owners still had some terrain in Yugoslavia. So in the first 2 years, it was very complicated. Then they opened the border with a special agricultural pass for the people who live there, and they could go to the other part. So they crossed every day the Iron Curtain, the border between Italy and Yugoslavia, to work their land on the other side of the border. And this went on until Slovenia came. When Slovenia was created in 1991, the situation grew even more easy again. And then later, the border was finally opened, and now you can cross every border there. And it makes the region very interesting, because you can go to wineries on both sides. You have fantastic wineries on both sides, top level. They will tell you about their history. They will tell you because they had some friend they went to play football with. They were their neighbors, but they lived on the other side of the border, which is very fun.
Yeah, so it's very unique, yeah. And I think it's super interesting. Another point, you were talking about Austrian earlier, and I discovered through the book that it was also the propagment of the working as agriculture, as viticulture, and that led to some of the most important agriculture, vivai Rauschedo, what I'm meaning. They came from the Austrian history, and Friuli is one of the biggest producer of clones and this sort of work. How that works and why that they did that?
Well, this is interesting. It did also this work of creating young plants for making new vineyards. That is always something very important. Every vineyard needs to be replanted after 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Some vineyards go on until 60 or 70, but very few vineyards become older than 70. That's very rare. So you need, now and then, you need to replant the vineyards, and you need also the plants. So you need what they call in Italy, vivaisti, so that those are nurseries who create the young plants that can be used for creating a new vineyard. The Austrians started to make such nurseries in the Wachau area, near Klosterneuburg and near Vienna in the Donau area. But they found out that in some winters it didn't go because it's too cold there and the plants died. And they found out that in Friuli you have a much better climate. And then they started to put the nurseries into Friuli. And that's the reason that near Rauschedo you have, at this moment, the biggest nursery for young wine plants in the world. And that's also, it has to do with the unique climate of Friuli.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible work that they're doing. And talking, about the greater region, you also cover part of Croatia. What parts of Croatia, what are the vineyards in Croatia? What are the region in Croatia?
I decided to include Istria into the book because Istria is part of the area of the North Adriatic, and the same for the Kvarner. Why? Because when you look at the history, Istria was part of the Roman Empire, and in that moment, Aquileia was the capital of the area, and it Aquileia covered the whole of Friuli and also the area of the Karst and Istria. It was one region, so the whole viticulture was dominated by Romans, and there was no border. It was only one region, so the knowledge, the grapes went through the whole region in that period. So it means the wine tradition has everywhere the same roots. This continued later in the 12th and the Middle Age, with still Aquileia as the main town. Istria had still many relations. Take, for example, the Abbey of Rosazzo is still a wonderful place, one of the most historical places of Friuli, which is a beautiful abbey. And they had their own vineyards in Koper, in Capodistria, and also in Istria. So it means there are so many ties and relations that you can really see the wine region as one wine regions only seated in three countries.
Read more, and then I like in the book how so many pictures and the maps they're so detailed. And I mean, for me, then I went in the region when I was young, and I was like 15 the last time I'd been. It brought me back to memories and a trip down memory lane. It was fantastic. And I mean, when also Friuli for me is also becoming famous in the last 10, 15 years for the orange wines in Oslavia, they're not something new. They've been doing for some producer for the last 30 years. Why did it start in Oslavia and why there?
First of all, you have to understand there's a lot of press writing about the orange wines and the wines with maceration, so skin fermented wines. But the total production of this typology of wines in Friuli is less than 1% of the total. Maybe it's a very much a niche product. It's a small group of companies who is making it, but they have huge attention in the press. There is a lot of interest. We should correct the impression, because it's not this wine tradition is dominating the wines in Friuli. It's not the case. It's just one of the kind of products that's coming from Friuli, and they're very interesting. Anyway, the tradition started in Oslavia with Josko Grafner, and with him together Radikon. But you have to look carefully, because there have been also some producers in the area that have always used this technique, because in the past there was no technology in the cellar. So how do you make a white wine? Already in the 19th century and in the 18th century, many white wines were treated like red wines. So they fermented together with the skins. Today, the producers have learned a lot more. But it's a very interesting movement, because it has to do with the quality of the grapes. Most of the producers are also natural wine producers, so they are organic and they want to be very careful with any kind of stuff producing in the nature. They only want they don't want pollution, they don't want chemical treatments, etc. They want really pure wines. It's also interesting that this new tradition is starting to use the skin of the white wine, the white grape, which in many wine countries in the world is not used. And I think it shows that the material, the compounds of the skin of the grape can give some extra to the taste of a wine. And this part is now discovered in more areas. And you see that various types of maceration of white wines, so fermenting on the skin for some hours, for some days, or for longer, is experimented now in many countries in the world. And interesting that it started all in Oslavia. In fact, what they say is that it is only going back to old traditions, because they say in the past there was no technology. So people used this technique because there was nothing else.
Modern wineries that really came out when electricity was available after the 50s and 60s. So white wine was always produced very differently in the past. And I think it was in Friuli particularly, was Scoppietto, then he brought the sort of modern white wine making. It sort of changed a bit how it...
Yes, Scoppietto was a pioneer. He was a wine seller from, I think, from Udine, if I'm not mistaken, and he started to introduce the filter techniques in the cellars, cooling techniques, etc., temperature control, all those things are very important for maintaining the elegance and the fragrancy in white wines. And white wines, of course, are very important for Friuli. So this technology is present still in most cellars. And yes, I think the man who started this bringing them was Scoppietto. So he has done something great for Friuli then, yes.
Friuli became the place to look for white wine in Italy. And still now it's very famous for its white wine. Not to take away from the reds, because there are beautiful reds produced in Friuli. Many grape, like, you have a Pignolo and a Scoppiettino. Which grape do you think are they doing the best in Friuli?
It is absolutely so that Friuli produces a huge range of fantastic, very elegant white wines. So it deserves a very good reputation here. But don't forget that Friuli really can produce fantastic red wines too, very interesting red wines. You have a range of very original grape varieties in Friuli. The most important is Refosco. They say it's authentic in Friuli, and I wanted to believe that. Although Refosco is identical to the Mondeurs Noir, which is also planted in the Savoie. But Refosco in the past was very important in Friuli. It has decreased a little bit because people have some difference with the high level of acidity. Personally, I think Refosca is great, especially when you blend it with other grapes. And some of the best wines that I tasted are blends of Refosco, Merlot, Cabernet. You have other varieties. The most important red varieties next to Refosco are Schioppettino and Pignolo. Pignolo is another variety with high tannin level, tannin content, and needs a lot of aging before getting really drinkable. I know one producer who is now doing an experiment of aging his Pignolo wine 20 years in a barrel before starting to bottle it. It's extreme. But Pignolo can be a wonderful wine if well made and if you have to pay the right attention and especially time. Don't forget, time is one of the very important factors for a good wine. It's not only the grape, it's not only the soil, it's not only the hand of the winemaker. Also, time is a very important factor. We should not forget that. Sometimes I am afraid that people tend to forget and open a bottle a little bit too early. And that's a pity, because you can have a great wine and you do not wait until the right moment.
And especially in Friuli, there are some you can still find some old bottles around and for without breaking the bank, and I think it's very good for the wines of Friuli.
I tasted a Refosco of Isonzo territory of 1999 last year, so it was 21 years old. This wine was totally fresh, young, easily drinkable, refined. This wine was so perfect. And then I realized Refosco is such a great variety if you only give the wine time. And it's so much a pity that people don't give the wine that much time.
Paul, I got the last question for you. If what grape would you think would be for someone who doesn't want to discover more about Friuli, and you think it would be like, well, I did never tried this before?
Well, we already talked about Friulano. Friulano is one of the signature white grapes of Friuli. I think Friulano can give wonderful wines, very intense. Also Malvasia. Malvasia is grown everywhere. In every territory, they have it different in every territory. So Malvasia is another grape. I want to make another point again, because I think the best wine that I tasted in Friuli is not a wine from one grape, but a wine from two or more grapes. Those are the best wines, and that's forgotten sometimes. So I want to bring this point, because it's also going back to old traditions. And fortunately, there are many producers that still produce wines like this, and I think you have to pay attention to it. I tasted some wonderful blends of Malvasia, Friulano, Ribolla, or a blend of Ribolla, Pinot Bianco, Chardonnay. There are many variations, so it's not one style. But go to the blends and search for something And very often they are also the highest priced wines of many wineries, so that already says something.
Friuli is a home of many style, of many great varieties, and also all the rest of West Slovenia, Istria and Kavanagh, all of them, they have so many styles grown in there, and it would be impossible in half an hour to cover all of them. I hope that we cover most points or the key points, and it was very interesting. Thank you for your time, Paul.
Thank you very much. I think you have paid a very nice attention to the North Adriatic area, and I hope the listeners are interested, and if they want to read something more, they can take the book North Adriatic.
Absolutely. The last question, actually, where can they find the book?
Well, at this moment, you can find it through my website. We are putting it on Amazon right now. So it will be also be on Amazon. It will be in some bookshops. I hope that there will be something in London, but I'm not sure yet. Also, due to COVID, I cannot travel, so that's a bit complicated. But the best thing is go to Amazon or go to my website.
Absolutely. And the book is called The North Adriatic. Thank you. Thank you for your time, Paul.
Thank you.
Today's guest was Paul Balk, author of the book North Adriatic. If you like to purchase the book, you can get a 10% discount using the code LIWPODCAST10. You can reach Paul on his social media or drop him an email through his website paulbalk.com, or you can get your discount code. Remember to hit the subscribe button and to tell your friends about the podcast. Be sure to go to mattiascarpazza.com and to subscribe to the mailing list. It's the only way you can listen to the pressage, the after interview conversation with the guest. You can find Looking Into Wine on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music and every major listening app. Support, if you like to support the podcast, you can donate on mattiascarpazza.com. Music produced by Samuele Di Nardo. Editing and mastering by Tommaso Ascoli.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.